Samuel Adams could not be bribed. The King of England was talking with his Prime Minister about his rebellious colonies in America. Another man was presently summoned to the presence of His Majesty. This man had just fled from bleak New England shores, driven away by the fury of the people. It was Thomas Hutchinson, acting governor of Massachusetts Bay Colony. Their talk soon drifted to the archenemy of King George, the man with whom none of the king's officials could get along, the man eternally plotting for freedom, namely, the man in the old red coat. Mr. Hutchinson had been complaining of Mr. Adams as the source of all discontent. "Why hath not Mr. Adams been taken off from his opposition by an office?" asked His Majesty. "Such is the inflexible disposition of the man that he would never be conciliated by any gift or office whatever," was the reply of Governor Hutchinson. The king looked annoyed. Again and again had stubborn, stupid George III asked why that troublesome, faraway colonist had not been bribed to keep his mouth fast closed on the unpatriotic subject of liberty. Again and again his agents had failed to give answer. Finally, Governor Hutchinson hurled back this startling reply when the old question was again pressed on him. Old King George turned red, while the lip of the Prime Minister curled with contempt at the answer. Honor so rigid that it was above all temptation which the wealth and splendor of proud Britain could offer was something in which the noble lord did not believe, and so far as the slow wits of the king had revealed men to him, gold and great titles always bought loyalty. The command went forth. That Boston Puritan must be bribed. Offer him $5,000 a year, a peerage, or anything, ordered the king, and the Prime Minister's notebook came out, and those items were placed opposite the name of Samuel Adams. The first June day of 1774 was a sad one in Boston. Every place of business was closed, and over the locked doors were hung mourning emblems. Muffled bells tolled mournfully for hours. Flags were at half-mast, and people were fasting and praying in their meeting houses. At 12 o'clock, British warships took possession of the harbor, and traffic, even in small boats from wharf to wharf, was stopped. The port of Boston was closed. Business of all kinds was given up. Men were idle on the streets, and starvation stared their families in the face. Boston was paying heavily for her daring dream of freedom and her presumption in throwing British tea into her beautiful harbor. The spirit of liberty was not quenched, however. During this time of want and sorrow, no man of influence came so near the people as Mr. Adams, for he actually shared their suffering. Although housed in comfort, he had a hard time supplying his little family with food. England knew it. She exulted the moment his small salary as clerk of the assembly stopped, for now she felt her opportunity had come. General Gage, who had been appointed governor, was instructed to bribe Mr. Adams at any cost. Although he was a far smoother man than former Governor Hutchinson, the general did not feel equal to the task. He looked about for a still more expert tool, and genial Colonel Fenton was the man. Visions danced through the mind of this courtly officer as he walked briskly to the humble mansion on Winter Street. His hand stole to his breast coat pocket, and a smile lighted his face as he felt some papers there. Snugly hidden were royal promises which must tempt any man. The gold-bedecked officer was now at the gate. Through an open window, he saw a sight which set him thinking. There in his poverty-stricken home, the man who has well been called the thorn in Great Britain's massive side sat serenely writing. As the tempter gazed, this thought came. What will that shabbily dressed New England deacon be in half an hour from now? Will he be one of the poor of earth with every means of support torn from him and his country swaying vengeance over his head? Or will he be a peer of Great Britain's mighty realm, enjoying princely revenue from the state? Colonel Fenton did not doubt. Again, he patted that pocket with the rustling papers and, smiling, knocked on Samuel Adams' door. The agent of regal power soon faced its great enemy. He was met by greeting courtly as his own and speech as smooth and keen. The colonel looked at the old darned coat of faded red and thought of the earl's coronet, which he was about to place on the head of the man who wore it. He glanced at the faded furniture and exulted that $5,000 a year so well offset its telltale shabbiness. The manly form of Mr. Adams' loved son could be seen through the open door of another room, and the tempter reflected, "If riches and honor do not tempt him, father love will. I am sure to succeed when I extend that splendid annuity through the life of his son." The shrewd diplomat approached the subject of his visit with great care. He was angling for nothing less than an empire, and if he could stay the hand which was tearing it from Great Britain, titles and gold would be his as well as the gray-haired man's before him. Winning was his smile and soft his tone as he said, "Mr. Adams, an adjustment of our troubles is very important to both. I am authorized by Governor Gage to say that he has been empowered to confer upon you such benefits as will be satisfactory upon condition that you cease opposition to the measures of the government." Here the wily tempter paused and, to make his bribe more effective by contrast, added, "It is the advice of Governor Gage not to incur the further displeasure of His Majesty. Your conduct is now liable to punishment. By act of Henry VII, you can be sent to England for trial. You have only to change your course to receive great personal advantage and make peace with the king." The still blue eyes of Mr. Adams had been fixed upon the speaker with interest. At first they were benevolent eyes, but as the tempter went on they grew cold and stern. Rising from his chair, he indignantly replied, "Sir, I trust I have long since made my peace with the King of Kings. No personal considerations will induce me to abandon the righteous cause of my country. Tell Governor Gage it is the advice of Samuel Adams to him to no longer insult the feelings of an exasperated people." England's agent had no reply to make. He had failed. The wealth of his great rich country had failed to corrupt the man they feared. One mighty soul existed on earth no gold could buy, no king could frighten. This scene has a humble setting, yet it is a very great scene. A plain, decent citizen of Boston in shabby clothes and in a little candle-lighted room hurls threats at a throne which its occupant dare not ignore. A nation in the wrong stands powerless before one undaunted man in the right. This age of bribery and corruption cannot afford to forget this gray-haired New England deacon who flung such splendid bribes from him in scorn. If plain Samuel Adams, eternally plotting and scheming for liberty, had been corrupted into Lord Adams, Earl of Massachusetts, there might have been a different history of the United States.